Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York on this, the first broadcast of network television's first daily half-hour news program. In Alabama today, Governor Wallace ringed a public school with state troops to delay integration ordered by a federal court. And in turn, the local Alabama school board threatened defiance of the governor. At his summer White House in Hyannisport on Massachusetts Cape Cod, President Kennedy today talked with this reporter of many things, including the political repercussions of the integration battle.
The first half hour of this hour, we're going to remember the life of Walter Cronkite. I don't know about you, but I'm always going to miss Walter Cronkite. I had a chance to read A Reporter's Life while on vacation the last couple of weeks, and we had planned to do a memorial show, but I was on vacation, and so we decided we would do this today because his death is recent and the loss that we feel, many of us, is pretty great. Walter Cronkite, actually our guest, Mike Simonson, is joining us from our Superior Bureau for Wisconsin Public Radio. Had a chance to meet Walter Cronkite. Mike has won many awards, one of them a National Headliner Award, a Public Radio News Director Award for Toxic Spill Coverage in 92, and in 97, the Edward R. Murrow Award, probably the most prestigious award around, for a series on discrimination against people with HIV/AIDS living in rural areas. So Mike's going to join me as we remember the life of Walter Cronkite, and we'll also hear some little clips of his broadcast, including that announcement. I remember hearing this, and when everything stopped in this country, the death of President John Kennedy, his coverage of the funeral, the death of Martin Luther King, the moon landing, in which we hear his incredible enthusiasm for all things space, the Vietnam War editorial, which many say turned the course of the war, and his very last newscast. So all of that will be included in our remembrance. And we'd like to hear from you as well. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Or you can also send your remembrances at www.wpr.org. Hello, Mike. Thank you so much for being with us.
You betcha, Kathleen.
Yeah. I will always miss him. I will always miss this guy. I loved Walter Cronkite, Mike.
You know, he died 3 weeks ago, but the issues revolving around his career and journalism will be with us forever, I hope.
Yes. You had a chance to meet him. He's one of the people always ask, who would you have wanted to interview? You didn't have a chance. One of them was Walter Cronkite. I always wanted to interview him. He gave you an award?
He was emceeing the Radio Television News Directors Association banquet and awards ceremony in 1997 in New Orleans. And everybody got their 45 seconds with Uncle Walter to have their picture taken. And I had just read the book his autobiography, and you try to say something to, you know, the great star, and so I went up to shake his hand, get the picture taken, and I was wearing a tux, and I said, remember when you're waiting 45 minutes at the altar for your wife, and she was late for the marriage, and you were said you were chafing in your tux? Well, that's exactly how I feel right now.
Oh, Mike, what a perfect thing to say to him. What did he say?
He just laughed, and as far as if I could get a laugh out of Walter Cronkite, that made my year.
I'm sure it did. You know, one thing after reading his book that struck me, and I guess I knew this about it, but it was reinforced, and I think of all the reporters, the people who lost their lives, the great danger that he put himself in covering World War II.
It was, he was in London. I think that was his first spot for UP. And then after the war, it was Moscow. But, you know, I mean, Murrow went up, and I think so many journalists went up because they knew that's where the story was. Although Murrow, it was kind of considered a lucky charm for pilots and crews because he never, never was shot down or anything. But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of the badge of honor, and sometimes you like to look danger in the eye, and you know, it's the big rush or whatever. I mean, I think all reporters would like to go up, not knowing and believing that that's where the story is and that's where Cronkite's going to go.
Right. And then the years in the Soviet Union in which they were poverty-stricken for the most part, those stories were fascinating.
Yeah. And eventually he had to send his wife, Betsy, home because she was expecting, and the medical facilities in the Soviet Union then and even now apparently are substandard and not reliable.
Mm-hmm. The New York Times had, I love their editorial about him, Mike, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this, that he stood for a world for a century that no longer exists. And I'd like for you to amplify on that. His death is like losing the last veteran of a world-changing war, one of the men who, and I love this description, who saw too much but was never embittered by it.
A journalist, I think, dangers, as I was in danger of cynicism. Skepticism is part of what we need to be, but cynicism is what we can't allow ourselves to be. And I think that described Walter Cronkite very well, and the way that he went across his daily business, and that's the way it was for that date.
Right. And had a chance to do this for such a long period of time. I'd like for you to comment on the place that he had, and it's probably, I think, of the time of the 60s, the 60s decade, which I lived through and was so hard. It was such a horrendous decade in so many ways. And there was Walter Cronkite guiding us through it in a way that, I mean, it wasn't reassuring. It was matter of fact in a way, but it was some kind of calming force that he had, or an intelligent force. I was glad that he was at the helm.
He was believable, which is why he was the most trusted man in America and called Uncle Walter. He didn't, except for the Vietnam War and then just that once, and after he had spent extensive time in Vietnam, he did not editorialize, trusting on the intelligence of his viewers to make their own decisions by telling both sides or three sides or four sides of the story, whatever it had to be. He, by doing that, you can trust the guy. You don't think, well, that's to be expected. He's a liberal or he's a conservative. He's going to say that. So, you know, the tenets of journalism then, the tenets of journalism now and in the future will remain the same, or at least they should, and that is to have a tenacity, which he had, to have strong writing skills, which he had, and the curiosity, which is one reason why he loved space so much, because he wanted to find out more of that final frontier.
Right. Even though, what was it, physics he flunked? And here he is explaining the whole space thing to us. Let's talk about the editorial for a moment, and let's listen to it first, because it was such an important statement and very rare.
It seems now more certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is to end in a stalemate. This summer's almost certain standoff will either end in real give-and-take negotiations or terrible escalation. And for every means we have to escalate, the enemy can match us. And that applies to invasion of the North, the use of nuclear weapons, or the mere commitment of 100 or 200 or 300,000 more American troops to the battle. And with each escalation, the world comes closer to the brink of cosmic disaster.
How was he allowed to do that, Mike, and why did he do that?
He was very wary of doing it. He talked to the news director, or the news president of CBS before he did it, and was encouraged to do that. It was clearly marked editorial. It wasn't part of the news segment, but it was something that he was really stepping out of his role. He was very wary about it. It's something any journalist knows, that if you're going to do that, if you're going to start taking sides, then it's going to be pretty tough for you to cover that story ever again, because people are going to say, well, you're saying that because you think the war is lost, for instance, or
right,
at least unwinnable. So, I think that was a very difficult thing for him, and it was, I think, the exception to the rule that proves the rule.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in, and I hadn't known this before, the part of the book where he's meeting with Bobby Kennedy and talking about the possibility of Kennedy entering the presidential race because he would have a difference of opinion and a different plan for Vietnam. And then Kennedy is talking about Cronkite running for the Senate from New York because he is the most trusted guy in America, and a lot of people are saying you should run for office. Wasn't that a fascinating exchange? I never knew it existed.
The celebrity of TV, especially network TV, is amazing, because then the person becomes the story. I mean, if you're just Walter Cronkite walking down the street, is a huge attraction. It would take away from anything else that would be going on, whether it's a building on fire or something like that. The celebrity is something that I think Walter Cronkite handled very well, but I think he appreciated that there's a danger to that celebrity and that you can't let it get to your head and do things like run for Congress.
Right. Yeah, and it continues with, I guess somebody got the story first, that Kennedy was thinking about the possibility of running for president, and Walter's about to go on the air, and he gets somebody to get Kennedy, who's on the floor, and says, you know, give me something here, because somebody else has got the scoop, so the story's already out there. And Kennedy's response to him is, well, I'll announce that I'm running for president, and you can at the same time announce that you're running for the when you announce that you're running for Senate in New York. It's a great story. We're going to welcome phone calls too, if you'd like. If not, Mike and I will just talk and we'll play clips from Walter Cronkite. But we'd like to hear from you as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you. All right, there, you do want to talk. Good. Mike Simonson is our wonderful Superior Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
For a moment, he was incredibly human. You can hear it in the voice, can't you, Mike?
When you're a reporter or an anchor, and I guess anchor is what Walter Cronkite was the ultimate of, you are busy doing the story, and the emotions just seldom catch up with you, but it did right then.
Mm-hmm. It sure did. And then he guided us through the next few days. You were too young to remember all of that. But it was...
I was in first grade.
First grade. Probably do remember some of it.
Yeah.
Let's go to some phone calls. Ken from Milton. Hi, Ken.
Hello. Walter Cronkite was like a father to me in that I'm a Vietnam veteran. But what a difference in times we have. I mean, consider how, what Walter Cronkite's attitude was towards taking a stand compared to, say, O'Reilly. As a newscaster, and I wondered what professional education Cronkite had.
Okay, he didn't finish college, did he, Mike?
No, he left after 2 years of college, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Peter Jennings also didn't finish college. Journalism isn't something you learn in a textbook.
Right.
I encourage everybody to get their college degree, but I encourage my students, for instance, to get a college degree, whether it's history or English, not necessarily journalism, because you need to use your brain is what you need to use, and you need to learn how to use it, and higher education will teach you that. But yeah, Cronkite was a couple of years short of getting his degree.
Yeah, and really learned from this guy started delivering newspapers and writing, I think, a column at some point when he was in eighth grade or ninth grade. When he was very young, he entered the newspaper business.
Yeah, I don't remember a whole lot of his early years, except that when he first started in radio in the 30s, they made him change his name to Walter Wilcox.
Right.
Sounds like a cartoon character.
Yeah. Let's go to Paul next from Toma. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Paul.
I really appreciated Walter Cronkite. My father and I watched his news every night and brings a lot of memories to me. But one question I haven't heard since he has died is that he hosted a program on CBS about the 21st century. And I haven't heard anything about that in his any of the information that's come out since his death. And I was just wondering if there was anything that you knew about that show. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Well, it was the 20th century that he did, and it was a documentary. I just finished watching the weekend of his passing. Discovery Channel aired all 8-hour-long segments.
Oh, they did.
Of Cronkite's life, and it was really so well done. It was Cronkite was there, but it wasn't just the kind of thing where he's crossing his legs and being interviewed by an academic. It was some real cool inside stuff about the challenges and sometimes the compromises he had to make as a journalist to get a story. That sort of it was great inside stuff, and it was 8 hours. It's not the 20th century like this fellow's talking about, but that was documenting different parts of the 20th century that when Cronkite did it.
Are they going to air it again, Mike?
I don't know. I recorded it, though. I made sure I could watch it again. It was so, I thought, representative of the 30s, 40s, I mean, right to the 21st century.
Right. That's the other remarkable thing about reading his book and looking at his life, the span of time on which he was reporting. And he was a smart guy and a terrific reporter, so sometimes it's wonderful to learn history through those kinds of eyes.
Yeah. Well, he was there for that history, and that's remarkable. Walter Cronkite was a good journalist. We shouldn't deify him. There were other journalists who perhaps were better at the time. He was a solid anchor, and he was a trusted anchor. And he was a good writer. I think those things were his very important skills. But as far as a journalist, he had seen it all. But there were better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email that has come in. Your intro with the clip of Walter brought tears to my eyes. My family had our dinner at 5:30 every evening. There was no talking because we listened to CBS Evening News. CBS was the only station that our television received back in those days, so we all got our news from Walter. I remember watching the news when JFK died, seeing the tears in my dad's eyes as we listened to that broadcast, as well as so many others. The Vietnam War was in our living room every night. The landing on the moon, the deaths of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, Watergate, and so much more. In today's world, a reporter such as Walter Cronkite is so badly needed.
What he's talking about is perspective.
Yes, right. And Watergate, we should mention Watergate, because Walter realized this was an important story that was pretty much covered in the Post, and then it got, page 14, page 15, and he did some lengthy pieces on the CBS Evening News on Watergate, didn't he?
Right. In fact, the Washington Post credits Cronkite for keeping the story alive, because it was dying and the interest was lagging. Cronkite seized on it, even though the Post was doing the lead reporting on it. Cronkite kept it in the evening news for, a third or more of the country to see, and kept Watergate going.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit more of, and some of this news is really hard to hear again. It does, it almost makes you cry again, doesn't it? Some of the major events that Cronkite reported on during the 1960s.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reportedly chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face. Police, who have been keeping a close watch over the Nobel Peace Prize winner because of Memphis' turbulent racial situation, were on the scene almost immediately. They rushed the 39-year-old Negro leader to a hospital where he died of a bullet wound in the neck. Police said they found a high-powered hunting rifle about a block from the hotel, but it was not immediately identified as the murder weapon. Mayor Henry Loeb has reinstated the dusk-to-dawn curfew he imposed on the city last week when a march led by Dr. King erupted in violence. Governor Buford Ellington has called out 4,000 National Guardsmen. And police report that the murder has touched off sporadic acts of violence in a Negro section of the city.
There almost is something different in listening to the way it's reported, the language that's used, the way that he reports things. It sounds different to me, doesn't it, to you, Mike? Is there a different use of language here, or his style, or it's here? Here's the presentation of the facts.
Here's a presentation of the facts, and that was so important that night because so many of America's cities were in flames because of this. Having calm and being factual and not being hysterical, not being afraid, even keeping from breaking down and crying, all of those things were so important because the nation was ripped apart by that assassination, and it could have been worse. I worked in Charlotte, North Carolina for several years. That was one of the large southern cities that didn't erupt in flames. It was very close. So many of the other cities did. His cadence stayed the same when he was talking about Martin Luther King's assassination as it did when he was reporting any other story.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's what I'm hearing in this. That's what I'm hearing. Well, we're going to go to Christiana Amanpour, who's also a terrific journalist here. Mike,
she's
marvelous.
Journalist. I'm humbled to fall to be before her.
Hey, you're not half bad yourself, sir. There's no doubt about that. Well, I'm going to miss Walter. I'm just going to miss him. He could have given my news. I've missed him ever since he left the air. He could have given me my news every night for the rest of my life and then my children's news, and it would have been okay with me. One of those people I just wish had lived on and on and on. He was great. Thank you, Mike, so much.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Yeah. Mike Simonson with us, our Superior Bureau Chief, who had the great pleasure of meeting Walter Cronkite when he won one of his national awards in 1997 in New Orleans. The meeting was hosted by Walter Cronkite, and he won a National Headliner Award for the Edward R. Murrow Award for a series on discrimination against people with HIV/AIDS living in rural areas. Mike's a heck of a reporter himself. Okay. Goodbye, Walter. We will miss you. Thanks, everybody, for your calls.